I can hear what you're thinking, all your doubts and fears. And if you look in my eye in time, you'll find the reason I'm here.
Come inside. Ignore the strange stickiness of the carpet beneath your feet. Find the right seat, the one without the missing arm and the exposed springs. Pull the candy bar out of your inside coat pocket. Look at the colors swirl as the canned music plays. Wait for the lights to go down. Listen for the telltale clacking of film being pulled through the gate. Relax. Watch. Because we all feel better. In the dark.
Do I know you?
I know you. You're that boy in the newspaper. Came back from the dead.
I didn't catch your name.
You like that song? I wrote that for you. I'll sing it at your funeral.
It's over.
Finally, we've come to the end of our rainbow.
Oh, God. It feels more like a march in the desert, actually.
This actually was only supposed to be, what, 2 or 3 episodes?
I think it was supposed to be 4 parts, originally.
Yeah.
Originally, we were going to do Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four, and a wrap-up episode.
And that was it.
Then it was, we should put Blade in. Then I had to open my mouth and said, you know, there's a lot of Hulk material.
Hulk material. So eventually, what did it turn out to be?
This is episode 6 and final.
Of what? And what are we talking about?
Marvel at the Movies.
We are doing a bit of bitching about it. But it has turned out to be a very popular series. You know, a lot of people have written in and they've emailed or they've called me or whatever. And they've said how much they enjoyed it. We have gotten a good bit of mileage out of Marvel.
We wouldn't be doing DC at the movies late next year if we didn't enjoy doing this one.
Exactly. And it has been enjoyable. It's just been taking us so long to get to this point. But finally, we've gotten here. This is going to be the last one we're going to do.
The Cosmic Rays Stop Here.
Uh-huh. And in this one, we're just going to briefly cover every other Marvel movie that we didn't cover in the previous.
And it's not that many.
Actually, no, there's not.
When we get to the last episode of DC at the movies, it's going to be a lot larger because there's a lot more stuff to cover. But here,
this one, it's really not, because a lot of these movies we've already covered, like the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, and Blade, so we don't have to talk about them. We just got to talk about the little one-offs.
The little one-offs and there. And we'll also spend some time talking about some of the prospective films that are coming your way in the future from Marvel. Because Marvel apparently is intending on doing a film a year for the end of the time.
Yeah, well, they've got, what, like 20 characters options for movies? They're like, forget it. They're maxing out everybody that they can.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to dive right in?
Now, just want to mention that we are using the list that is provided by Wikipedia.
Yes.
As our source today.
Yes, we're just going down the list that they have. That's what we're doing. So
where we start with, I guess. We start with the serial.
Captain America. 1944 from Republic Pictures.
This was apparently, though, a very successful serial, because I seem to recall that they had actually planned a sequel to it. The people who produced this one lost the rights and changed the character to a generic hero called the Copperhead.
The Copperhead, yes, which is a serial I've seen. Actually, the Copperhead's very good serial. Mm-hmm. I love it a lot. And I've actually seen Captain America, because as you know, and as most people out there know, I'm a very big fan of 1940s and 30s pulp heroes and serials. You know something, folks? If you want to see this one, know where you should go? Go to your public library.
They probably
have. The public library has a whole lot of these 1940s serials on DVD and VHS, free for the rental. That would be my suggestion.
Now, you've seen this, I haven't.
Well, first of all, he doesn't have a shield in this one. He carries the .38 revolver.
But that was de rigueur for most superheroes in that day.
Well, I guess they didn't want to have to go through the budget building a shield and then have
throwing it around.
He's not even Steve Rogers in this one, if I remember. He's like a Los Angeles district
attorney. I know
attorney.
He was a district attorney. The origin was all changed.
Yeah, and instead of fighting the Nazis, he's fighting your standard gangster type.
Right. Well, this is at the tail end of the war, so at this point they were looking towards... Although it was funny, one of the few serials I have seen is... The Blackhawk series is one of the last serials ever produced.
Which is a very good one. Very faithful to the...
They were still using Nazis there.
Yeah. I know this is probably not going to appeal to a lot of people today because they look at those serials and they say, oh, they're old and cheesy and corny. If you watch them, you're going to get tired of... because a lot of them, they reuse the same cliffhangers over and over again.
He's falling off a cliff! His car exploded!
The car exploding, yes. It's really not made... for just sitting and watching all the way straight through. Like, I would recommend that if you do want to watch it, watch maybe 2 or 3 chapters a day, if that, and come back and do
it. You should probably do it like they would do when my mom and your mom were kids. Watch it one at a time.
Well, that's what I do when I watch serials. I watch one chapter every night before I go to bed, and then I come back for the next week. The production values are nothing to speak of. They did this on a budget of about $20. I do recommend the fight scenes, though. One of the things about the serials was that they had these incredible fight scenes where there's not a stick left standing.
Right.
So that's enough said about Captain America. If you want to see it, go to your public library and see if you can rent it.
So we go from the serials, and the next time Marvel has any sort of presence in... visual moving media is, of course, the, and we've talked about these before, the Universal TV film pilots.
Right.
Now, we talked previously about Spider-Man that spawned a series and Hulk that spawned a series. There were 3 other films that were TV pilots from Universal in 1978. The first one to air was also Captain America. Captain America has had the worst luck of any superhero when it comes to being translated to visual media. This poor guy!
They just can't get it
They can't get him right. Reb Brown plays Captain America. And the thing that's noteworthy about this film is they didn't even give him the right costume.
He actually plays the son of the original Captain America.
Exactly.
He's Steve Rogers Jr.
So he's got like this outfit that looks like it's a blue spandex shirt with red and white suspenders, if you remember. And like the one star in the middle. It just looked cheesy as all fuck.
You know the only thing I like about this is that they gave the super soldier serum an actual name.
Right.
And this one they call it FLAG, Full Latent Ability Gain, which basically it's the super soldier serum. They give it to him because they say, well, you know something, since your father originally had it, we figure it's in your system already.
Right.
Because they've been having problems giving it to other guys. They go crazy. So they give it to him and he becomes the new Captain America.
This one was... pretty cheesy.
Yeah, he has a transparent shield in this one.
Which also affixes to his motorcycle, and it becomes the windshield of the motorcycle.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
Okay, yeah, admittedly, that was kind of cool. This one almost went to series, this because they made a second one instead of doing what we talked about in the Fantastic Four episode.
Well,
at
the end of this one,
I
do remember distinctly that he makes a little speech that, well, if you want me to be Captain America, I want to look like my father. So they do give him
they do
give him the authentic one at the very tail end, which I think feels like something they went back and filmed and shot and just tacked
on
it.
The sequel, which came out the following year, was called Death Too Soon. And the thing that's noteworthy about this, besides the fact that Captain America looks like Captain America, the villain, Christopher Lee.
Oh, okay.
Would you allow me to call him a great man?
Yes.
He is a great, great man.
Great, 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 great man.
Ben.
But this one I've never seen. No, I've seen the first one.
Yeah. This one is also pretty low rent and cheesy. Captain America films are probably the nadir of the Universal TV pilots. They're kind of shabby. They are obviously low budget. They're not really very interesting.
You know why?
With one exception, which we're going to get to next.
Now, I know that they have a Captain America movie. They've got one planned that's in the works. I'm wondering, how are you going to sell Captain America to the overseas markets where America really isn't that popular these days? And this is a character that's steeped in American patriotism.
It doesn't even like, okay, Superman's also a patriotic hero, but he's got the immigrant experience.
He's the ultimate immigrant. That appeals to everybody. I'm wondering if the only way you can really do a Captain America movie is to do it in period, World War II. When you put him in the modern day world, well, how do you sell him to the overseas markets? Maybe I'm off base here, but that's just me.
And there was one final Universal pilot.
And this one, actually, I think, is the best of the five.
Cool. This one is really cool, even though they, shall we say, they took a lot of liberties with the character. I'm speaking, of course, of Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah.
They did change a crap load. So instead of it being the Ancient One, it was the ancestor of Merlin.
Merlin the Magician,
who trains Stephen Strange in the martial art. Mm-hmm. In the martial art. The magical arts. It would have been a much different film if he was trained in the martial arts. Doctor Strange, kicking up much ass.
Doctor Strange, master of kung fu.
Right. This was pretty good. The villain was Morgana Le Fay. Mm-hmm. For what
played
it
by, what, Jessica Walters?
Jessica Walters,
who,
yes.
In her day, was a very attractive woman.
Yes. And there were some nice special effects, which is something that was kind of sorely missing from the other four. They actually tried to replicate on their low budget the look of a Kirby / Steve Ditko other dimension when he goes off and fights Morgana Le Fay's elder god.
And the main character who plays Doctor actually does look like
he looks
like,
Peter Hooten,
Hooten, that's his name.
Who apparently never worked again.
I've never seen him anything else except for that one Doctor Strange.
Do you remember the comic book magazine Amazing Heroes?
Sure.
They tracked Peter Hooten down, and he's now an actual medical doctor.
Really?
He's very happy in his life, so much power to you, man.
Interesting.
This one, I really thought, was the best of the five.
It wasn't bad at all. I have fond memories of seeing this. And it must have been a popular movie because they kept rerunning it on TV quite frequently.
Well, they would show it a lot on like CBS, because CBS did all these Universal pilots. And they showed it a lot on the CBS late night movie.
Late Ride, exactly. That's where I remember always caught it. Because, of course, this was in the day before we had VCRs. You wanted to see the movie, you actually had to stay up and see it. So I remember seeing it quite a bit.
Yeah, and I know that Sci-Fi Channel, every once, whenever they do superhero marathons, trots all five of these
things out. Like a whole day, and they'll show all of these Universal things. So if you want to check it out, feel free to
do it. I know that it was released, all three of these films that we just talked about, the Universal pilots, were released on VHS. I don't think they're available on DVD. Mm-hmm. So if you guys haven't thrown out your video recorders yet, you might be able to still find it on eBay, you know, a buck or something.
Or if you go to the comic book convention, you'll find it.
Right, sure.
And if you're really that interested in checking it out.
Now, another film that is not available on DVD, but was available on VHS, and this one I'm ashamed to admit saw in the theaters, 1986. The George Lucas make good to the Hayek siblings. Yeah. Howard the Duck.
Well, don't feel ashamed about seeing the theaters, because I saw the theaters too, because I was a big Howard the Duck fan.
I remember seeing this. Remember the Los 44? It's like the Nokia concert hall now. Uh-huh. One of the few single screen movie theaters in Manhattan in the 80s and 90s. Watched it with my two friends, Lauren and Vaughn. And when Leah Thompson showed...
And they probably beat your ass for dragging
No, we were all Steve Gerber fans. We were all Howard the Duck fans. In fact, I've got in my bag right with me.
He's got a visual.
To show how much of a Steve Gerber fan I am, yes, I will be seen in public with Essential Man Thing.
Essential Man Thing.
Yes. We were watching this, and when Leah Thompson comes up and introduces herself as Beverly Switzer, I just had enough, and I just shouted out, like hell you are.
Much as we like Leah Thompson.
So, and she's a very nice actress.
Very wonderful actress. Love her a lot. But yeah, she's not Beverly Switzer. No.
I remember also Steve Gerber kept saying, oh, this is a great movie. This is a great movie. And many years later, I got the opportunity to talk to him. Mm-hmm. I said to him, could I just ask one question? And if you don't want to answer it, that's fine. I remember reading all this stuff where you said how wonderful the Howard the Duck movie was. What really happened? He said, well, I just kept thinking to myself, maybe I'm the only person who sees what a crap it is.
Yeah.
And it's pretty poor. The script
is pretty damn bad.
Now, the thing about the Howard the Duck comic book series is it's a very adult, very satirical.
Very satirical, very cynical, very everything that the movie's not.
And the movie is a family film.
Very political.
There are occasional glimmers where you get the impression that screenwriters did actually read a Howard the Duck comic. Mm-hmm. The moment where Howard has to go through the Cleveland Department of Employment to get a job.
That's the only part of the movie I feel is really faithful to the
that and
book.
The Cajun sushi joint.
Okay, well,
those are the two moments where they go after Jeffrey Jones, who plays the villain, and is been zapped by the cosmic evil things, and they're like sitting there trying to figure out what him, Tim Robbins, who this must be one of his first films,
it's one of his earliest roles,
and Leah Thompson are trying to figure out, and Joe's Cajun sushi.
what to do next. Meanwhile, Geoffrey Jones is sitting there just going like,
And I believe I've mentioned this to you before. I firmly believe that Vincent D'Onofrio's performance in Men in Black was influenced because he does the exact same thing.
It's funny because both characters turn into a giant big scorpion
thing. Big bug, right? Yeah, exactly. First of all, Howard the Duck looks like a guy in a midget in a suit.
That is probably just the restraints of special effects at the time.
Well, of course, if they could do it now, with the CGI that we have, that is so advanced that you could make a Howard the Duck that actually did look like the Howard from the comic. This doesn't look like
that. But they kept taking stuff out and adding stuff in. Beverly Switzer isn't just a down-on-her-luck girl. She's the leader of a rock band. And Howard the Duck plays vocals in the rock band.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, they have that horrible concert scene where he's shaking his tail.
Although, I got to admit, I liked... Overall, the score, one of the few scores done by Thomas Dolby, who was
Blinded Me with Science. Yeah, but this is the movie George Lucas has disavowed.
Yeah, that's why we're probably never going to see an official DVD release. You know, I mean, it was done as a favor for the Hayeks, who, because they stepped in at the last minute and did a rewrite of Empire Strikes Back. This was their thank you. This is the thing they wanted to do. It's just sad that it turned out to be such crap.
It's pretty bad, folks.
It's pretty bad.
Don't see it.
From there, speaking of pretty bad, I think I'm about to go off on the audience here.
Want your 5 minutes?
No, it's not even going to be 5 minutes.
Okay.
It's going to be more like what happened with the Hulk. We have The Punisher, 1989.
Ah!
New World Pictures. Film starring Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren and Louis Gossett Jr.
Louis Gossett Jr. You and I have talked about the fact that there are a large number of people who are of the opinion that this film is superior to the later film that we're going to discuss later in the line.
Yes.
What the fuck are you people on? What is wrong with you? Jeez Louise!
Take a drink of water, Tom.
The biggest problem with this film is it's not about the
Punisher. It's not the Punisher, no. It's a pretty good action movie if it was... They call him the executioner or the...
The eviscerator.
The eviscerator, the ass-kickerer, or whatever it is. But it's not the Punisher.
And the thing that amazes me about this film is New World Pictures seem to have gone out of their way to minimize any identification that Dolph Lundgren's character has with the Punisher.
Yeah.
The famous... skull is just the hilt of his dagger,
in his boot. He doesn't have a skull motif, anything like that.
All the stuff about him being a government operative, all out the window. He's just a cop. It's just. And I don't know.
It's reduced to your basic generic action movie.
And there's a whole Yakuza subplot going on. You are probably a bit kinder to it than I am, but I thought that Yakuza thing was just like, Japanese gangsters are cool, let's throw them in there. It just makes not a lick of sense.
If you sit there and you mentally edit out anything that says Punisher, I can watch it.
But, called it Frank.
But it's by no stretch of the imagination better than the recent movie that we had. A lot of people that claim that, this is better than this. I said,
I'll tell you why I think that is when we get to the Lionsgate version shortly.
Are like elbows. You know?
Next up is something really obscure that I remember reading about way back when in Amazing Heroes, to cite that again, which is, of course, the Power Pack TV pilot. I've never seen this.
I've
provided as an hour-long TV pilot. It was supposed to be intended for a Saturday morning kids show.
Considering it's about four kids.
It never aired. I've seen production stills from it. They decided to dispose all the snarks and all the science fictional elements. And the villain is this big fat guy who looks kind of like Orson Welles.
Okay.
We don't know anything about it because I haven't seen it.
Sorry, folks. If you know anything about it, tell us. Because
it's got to be better than...
We can't help you.
Once again... Captain America can't get himself a break. Now, this was done by 21st Century Films. I think it was like Menachem Globus started when he and Golem had the split. I remember going to a theater in Fresh Meadows in Queens and seeing a one sheet advertising that this movie was coming, which featured the arm of Captain America being held up with the shield.
Oh.
It never came out. When it was finally released on video, there's a good reason why it never came out in the theaters.
Excellent reason why.
Starring the son of one of the writers of our time.
J.D. Salinger.
J.D. Salinger. Matthew Salinger.
Who also I've never seen in another movie. Unlike
with Peter Hooten, I understand why Wood would be insulted if I called him Wooden. The faults with this film start with its script.
which was written by this bizarro whack job, who, among other things, claimed that there's a speech somewhere in the film, if you remember. The Red Skull is ranting to his minions that he was personally responsible for the assassination of John F. Kennedy,
Martin Luther King,
and John Lennon. And I remember reading an interview with this wackadoo who wrote this script, and he claims that he believed this 100%. I think he should meet Tim Krang, I think, because they're both equally delusional.
There are some people that should never be allowed to write anything in their life because they actually think they can do it. Writing is like riding a bicycle. Everybody figures that they can do it.
Was also, keep in mind, the film that for no readily apparent reason made the Red Skull Italian.
What was that all about?
I have no idea.
But apparently the budget was so low that the same actor played a different part in the movie.
Let's not forget, this film was cursed from the day it was born. Because not only was the guy who wrote it a total ding-dong, but this man is not a great, great man.
No.
Although his name will probably come up in the future. The only person who has managed to get worse with each successive movie he's made, Mr. Albert Piyun.
Man, we could do a whole episode. Matter of fact, we are going to do a whole episode about it. Because this is a guy that came out with a brilliant sword and sorcery movie, The Sword and the Sorcerer.
Exactly.
I raved about this movie because I said, oh my God, it's like Robert E. Howard was on the screen. Since then,
every successive film he has made has stunk on ice.
His career has went to the shitter.
He is responsible for Captain America.
Scott Paulin.
Scott Paulin. I knew it was Scott.
That's the guy who plays Red Skull. Right. I knew it would come to me if I stopped thinking about it.
It does, oddly enough, except for that weird thing about the Red Skull, more or less follow the origin story pretty closely. Maybe without Bucky.
Maybe you remember it better than I. The only thing I remember is the stinky rubber ear.
Instead of letting Matthew Salinger's ears stick through the cowl like it's supposed to, they had fake rubber ears on his... what the hell was that?
Why would you put...
And Darren McGavin was in it.
Darren McGavin, who apparently needed the work badly.
Yeah, very badly. Isn't Emmett Walsh in it as well?
Your memory of it is better
than mine. I'm trying to black it out. That's why I'm hazy here.
I've seen the movie exactly twice on HBO.
It's done on a budget of about, what I've got in my pocket right here. It's justifiable why it was dumped direct-to-video, because it is probably of this list, I'm going to invoke that phrase again, it is a pulse level of awfulness.
Horrible.
And this one doesn't even have Kristen Bell in it. There's no reason for us to talk about it ever again.
Actually, the only thing I remember about it is that it had a pretty cool ending theme song.
That's
all I can say about it.
Well, luckily, things are starting to get a little better now
on
our timeline. Because now we come up to 1998, the second of what were two pilots that Fox Television did in relation with Marvel. And you liked this one a lot. Lukewarm towards it, but you really liked this one.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Starring David Hasselhoff.
David Hasselhoff has Nick Fury.
Of all people. I'm not a big David Hasselhoff fan because I must be the only red-blooded American male that didn't like Knight Rider. I don't see what the thing about Knight Rider is. You know, well, it's a guy with a talking car. Big deal. But this movie, I enjoyed a lot because I feel that it is totally faithful to the spirit of the Jim Steranko.
You know what else I find interesting is that it was also faithful to the status quo of Nick Fury as a character at that time.
Yeah.
Because they have to find him in the middle of nowhere. He's living as a hermit.
He's living as a hermit. Countess Valentina.
I cannot stand this actress, but I thought Lisa Rinna gave a really impressive performance.
She was very good. She has to go to the Pacific Northwest, where Nick Fury is living as a hermit, having been forced out of his job as public director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And see, this is why I'm saying this is faithful to the comic book, because in the comic book, S.H.I.E.L.D. has a public director, and then there's a secret cabal of...
Tony Stark is part of that.
Right, that he reports to. But he's like the face out in front. Mm-hmm. He was ousted from his job, but, of course, his arch nemesis,
Hydra,
has resurrected, who is
Baron Strucker's daughter, the Viper.
Viper has kidnapped her father's body from a secure S.H.I.E.L.D. facility.
Once again, I'm just surprised because all of this is pretty much reconcilable with the status of all these characters at the time.
When I saw this movie for the first time, I felt I was watching the Jim Steranko version. There are plenty of scenes, especially when he gets back into his S.H.I.E.L.D. gear. He's got the cigars stuck in his teeth. That Hasselhoff looks just like a Jim Steranko illustration. The Hellcarrier looks like what it's supposed to look like, a flying battleship. They have the life model decoys right in there. They've got the gadgets. They've got the guns. They've got all of the characters. They've got Clay Quatermain. They've got Dum Dum Doogie. Yeah. They've got Gabe Jones. I mentioned this movie to people, and they go, "Ha, Patooey." And I said, "Oh, okay, well, I guess
I don't go, yeah, Patooey, but I don't think it's as great as you do."
But I know people that say, "Oh, I don't see how you don't like Daredevil, but you like Nick Fury." Well, maybe because they didn't bastardize it and try to turn it into Jim Steranko's greatest
right
hit. They sat down and said, well, we want to tell the story. To give David Hasselhoff his credit, I'm not a big fan of his, but it was pretty obvious to me. He actually sat down and read the comic
right
book because he got Nick Fury right. That's my thing. I like it. If you don't, I'm sorry.
So now we're going to start getting a little more in-depth in some of this stuff. 2003's Daredevil.
Yeah.
Where the world was introduced to a young man by the name of Mark Steven Johnson.
Yeah, man with more enthusiasm than talent.
Yeah. There's a man who should probably have our slogan there. I didn't find this as reprehensible as a lot of people did. I do agree with you, though, 100%, that this film is taking a two-year-long storyline and compressing it into the space of 2 days. And it makes no sense whatsoever done that way.
It's Frank Miller's greatest hits, which, you know, I don't have a problem with. If you're going to do that, then you should have got Frank Miller to direct.
But and there are other problems with it, starting with their portrayal of Bullseye, who apparently ported in from the 60s Batman series. He's just in another movie entirely. Everybody else is so grim and dark, and he's like, look at my, oh,
well, he's trying to have fun.
You can have fun without being a total wackadoo.
Well, this is true, too.
I think also part of the problem is that it was a flavor of the month casting that they cast Elektra with
Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Manjaw Garner,
who was very big at the time because of Alien, which a lot of people.
The only reason you guys like her is because she kicks ass in that series. Be honest. Just be honest. Grow a set.
I never saw the appeal.
People
say to me all the time, "Oh man, you don't watch Aliens?" I said, "No, because I've already seen this series when it was La Femme Nikita."
Right.
I said, "I've already seen this series. I don't have to watch it again. If I want to watch it again, I'll go back and watch
right
La Femme Nikita."
God, Manjaw. I'm sorry. She's just not an attractive person.
I don't understand the appeal of her myself. I'm sure she's a wonderful human
being.
And horribly miscast as Elektra, who's supposed to be of Greek descent. Her father...
Well, I've always said, unfortunately, she's now... At that time, I think she had gotten too old. But Melanie Kananitis, I think is her name?
Oh, is that the girl
from CSI New York?
Now,
she would have been perfect.
She looks like Elektra, yeah.
And I've even said that in the past, if they switched Jennifer Garner and Jessica Alba into their respective movies,
mm-hmm,
Jessica Alba would have made a perfectly acceptable, still wouldn't have been able to act, but she would have made a much more acceptable Elektra than Jennifer Garner does.
Jennifer Garner looks nothing like the ethnicity of the character she's supposed to look at. She doesn't do a thing for me sexually. I don't think... I felt that they were trying to reproduce the Batman-Catwoman thing from Batman Returns, mm-hmm, with the relationship between her and Daredevil.
And I thought that Michael Clarke Duncan was a very good choice as Kingpin, but he wasn't given anything to do.
He wasn't given anything, exactly. Just staying around and look menacing.
Especially since, you remember, before the film was released, Mark Steven Johnson said, "Oh, the reason I cast a black man as the Kingpin was because I wanted somebody who was menacing but could also act." And that's Michael Clarke Duncan in a nutshell, but mm-hmm, he wasn't given a chance to act.
He's not given a thing to do.
He smells a rose, he smokes a cigar, he laughs, and then he gets his ass handed to him by probably the most unconvincing action hero in the history of cinema. Mr. Ben Affleck!
A skinny white boy.
Yeah!
There's no way on earth you can convince me that Michael Clarke Duncan is going to get beat by Ben Affleck.
No, it's like, because it's funny, because it's like, Matt Damon could have maybe been Daredevil.
Well, listen.
And I would have believed Matt Damon could have kicked Michael Clarke Duncan's ass.
Yeah, now that's true.
I will give it Ben Affleck this much.
So he's good Matt Murdock.
And him and John Favreau were gold.
They struck the perfect note,
you know,
in the relationship.
You know what our client paid me and Matt? Fish.
Fish.
They are absolutely...
It's a wonderful report at
that
movie.
You know, Daredevil is one of my favorite comic book characters.
Next time, man.
One thing I've always contended is Foggy Nelson, John Favreau's character, is treated like the biggest dumbass on the history of the planet in the Daredevil comic book. And one of the things I did like about Favreau's performance is you always got the impression he would, like, had almost all the pieces together, but he was just missing one or two of them.
He kind of had...
Because he's constantly testing Matt.
There's a couple of lines where he's kind of like, and I'm saying, is he trying to imply that he knows that Matt is Daredevil? It's an interesting thing that he does with Foggy, which treats the character with respect and not like a bumbling idiot.
But overall, this is just a very bad film.
I hear it all the time from people where they tell me, oh, well, you didn't see the director. And if you listen to some people, the director's cut must be Citizen Kane next to the theatrical version. I'm really not interested. Why would I pay more money to see the director's cut of a movie I didn't like the first time?
Do you remember the film The Hard Way?
Yeah.
Okay, when I was watching The Hard Way, way back when, in the theaters, I was enjoying it. And then the second I stepped out of the movie theater, the questions started coming in my head that just chipped away at my enjoyment. Until by the time I got home, I was, this movie really wasn't very good.
It wasn't very
good. That's what Daredevil was like. I think part of it was just I was so prepared for this film to suck the cock of many nations.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in the theaters, and I was like, okay, it was not so bad. But with distance, I realized that it's not very good.
Yeah. There's a lot of good things in it that I do like. John Pantoliano.
He's wasted.
Another great character is wasted.
A major mistake of the film is front-loading the origin story. The whole story is put on hold for that 40 minutes where Ben Affleck is, hey, I'm going to tell you a story about how I became to be Daredevil.
Yeah.
The story does not start until roughly about 40 minutes into the picture.
This movie is trying too hard to be Batman.
Now, what they could have done,
trying to be Batman.
Especially since they introduced Ben Urich, Mark Steven Johnson is so obsessed with Frank Miller, and I realize I'm kind of critiquing the movie I want to see, as opposed to the movie that actually existed. Which I realize is a hazard, but let me just state this, is if they had mimicked the story arc that Ben Urich had during the Frank Miller run, where he was in the background piecing this stuff together.
Right. You got it right.
Because that way, also, it would not have wasted Joe Pantoliano as a character, because he shows up every couple of scenes to drop some exposition and then disappears.
Things I do like about this is I like the costume a lot.
A lot of people complain about that costume, but it's very practical.
If you're going to be going out fighting bad guys every night, you want something that's going to cover your entire body, like Daredevil does.
And I also liked the sequence in his apartment, where we get to see the typical day of Matt Murdock, where he's waking up and he's taken a fistful of painkillers.
Right.
And he's like examining his body for the new scars.
Right. This is the one that shows the actual physical toll it takes to do this type of stuff. He's wrapping ace bandages around his knee because he's torn it jumping off a rooftop.
And one of the nice things also is that apparently Ben Affleck went and got some coaching about how blind people go about their day. Remember there's that scene where he's got the money in the little...
That's something I always wondered. How did blind people pay for stuff?
To give Mark Steven Johnson credit, once again, he manages to organically give a tip of the hat to the various generations of that character.
Yeah, okay.
He did a similar thing here. So you have, for example, during that sequence where he's in his loft, there's a voice message from Heather Glenn.
Yeah, that was nice.
And little things like the names of the fighters that his father fights in that.
Yeah.
Ditko and Colin and Romita.
Old Daredevil.
Decent stuff, but it's just overall, it's just not a very good film.
Yeah,
it doesn't hang right.
It doesn't work for me.
It made a lot of money, and there's been talk back and forth about them doing a second one, although Ben Affleck said he's not coming back.
Much like with the Hulk movie, like rebooting the franchise, doing a second one, but with a whole different cast and with a whole
new director. And thank God, when Mark Steven Johnson was attached to the sequel, he reined himself in, because originally he wanted to do the Born Again storyline. Could just imagine what a mess that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
He was thinking about introducing one of the costume villains. And he was talking about Mr. Fear. But right now, Daredevil is pretty much in limbo.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think there is a potential. And I think that that was one of the problem with, apparently, 20th Century insisted on having more stunt sequences put in after the success of Spider-Man. So it became almost Spider-Man-like.
Spider-Man-like, I got you. It's got its fans. I've even stopped discussing it with friends of mine because they start foaming at the mouth about it. So, you know who you are. Yeah, you know who you
are. I know who you are.
So what are we talking about?
Okay, well, the next big one, because we already talked about X2, we already talked about the Hulk. And this one, I think we both agree, is really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't understand why you people like the original, The Punisher.
Yeah.
The Thomas Jane thing.
The 2004 one from Lionsgate Films.
And a lot of people complain that it's not really the Punisher. But it's not. It's an origin story.
Yeah, he's not the Punisher until the end of the movie.
Right. The best way to approach this film is to approach it, and you and I have talked about this, as a spaghetti western.
That's what it is.
Because it's 100%. It's a spaghetti western.
It's a revenge story. Guy gets shot up, dumped in the ocean, left
his
for
family
dead,
killed
in a really brutal scene.
That's actually, the sequence where Samantha Mathis and the actor playing Frank Castle's son are running down the dock.
The dock, yeah.
While there's Quentin Glass and the other characters coming for them, getting ready to kill them. That just tears me up.
Yeah, this is a movie.
It's a brutal movie, and it's too. Lionsgate's credit that they allowed this film to stay in R.
Instead of going the PG route
with Ghost Rider.
Right. They didn't pull any punches. The scene where Frank Castle's family gets massacred.
That's just hard to watch.
You say, whoa, Roy Schneider plays.
Yes, plays his father.
Plays the father. This one is the typical.
Right. And I thought, like, for example, making Frank from a Vietnam vet to a former CIA operative. That was a very elegant way of literalizing.
I mean, because let's face it, Vietnam veterans, right? About there.
Marvel has kind of acknowledged that at this point, Frank is in the 60s.
In the comic books, yeah. I think he's been allowed to age. Like, right. So now he is in the 60s. But I understand why they did it for the movie.
Right.
And unlike a lot of comic book fans, it doesn't bother me when they make a change like this because it makes sense.
And I also want to point out that the casting of Thomas Jane has the Punisher. What a great choice.
It was an excellent.
And he was very upfront about this. He's not one of these people who try to play the game and say, oh, I always love comic books. He didn't know anything about comics. I was at a Fangoria convention where Thomas Jane was speaking for Dreamcatcher.
Okay.
And he said to the audience, guys, I've got this offer to do this film. I'm not sure. It's a comic book movie called The Punisher. What do you think about me playing that role? The audience went nuts.
Okay.
He went and he did his research and he's become a really big proponent of the character and a big fan. Sadly, he's had to walk away from the sequel, but we'll get to that in a little bit. I think that he's got the look right. He's got the body language right.
Attitude.
He is Frank Castle. And it's really great to see this
it's
guy.
It's like one of these characters that now, like with Christopher Reeve as Superman and Hugh Jackman and Wolverine.
Right.
Now you can't imagine anybody else playing that part. Really.
I mean, not as good as John Travolta playing Howard Saint, who is the stand-in for Mama Nucci.
Somebody told him he was remaking The Godfather.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, it's all...
Because John Travolta and the other guy, they act like they're in a serious, straight Francis Ford Coppola...
The character playing Quentin Glass. And let's not forget, of course, our Talia Shire stand-in, the actress who played Lydia Saint, who was in Mulholland Drive. The Saints are not very interesting characters.
They act like they're in a completely different movie.
The story is very, very, very loosely based on the first storyline in the new Punisher comic, Welcome Back, Frank. And I can understand why they had to replace Mama Nucci as the main villain, because Mama Nucci was a total caricature who ends up being thrown into a polar bear pit and having her limbs eaten off. But Howard Saint is just not an interesting character, and what he's doing that's wrong doesn't quite feel right.
Yeah.
It feels kind of petty that he's killing all these people.
It's just like he's killing just because he's got to kill people.
However, Kevin Nash is really good as the Russian.
Yes, they have an excellent fight scene in it.
Yes.
Excellent fight
brutal
scene.
Brutal little fight scene. And I also liked the casting, not so much Rebecca Romijn.
Yeah, she's going back
she's
to using her
She's very miscast. But the other two actors who played Spacker Dave and Mr. Bumpo. Mr. Bumpo was played by John Pinette, who was a cast member of one of our favorite Forgotten TV shows, Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Right.
They were really well cast.
Yeah, yeah. Those are the inhabitants of the building that Frank eventually ends up living in while he's getting his
revenge thing on. Jonathan Hensley, who directed it, really paid a lot of attention to trying to get the right actors for the job. And I think overall, if you approach it as a spaghetti western and not as the Punisher movie.
Right.
You're right. The Punisher doesn't show up till the very last shot of the very last
frame. Exactly. That's when he becomes a Punisher.
If you approach it like that as an origin story, it is a much better film than the original, and it's a great film.
It works very well. I've seen it about like 4 or 5 times, and I enjoyed it every time I've seen it.
Sadly, I would have liked to have seen Thomas Jane continue, but because, among other things, I've heard the rumor that they're trying to get a PG-13 for the new film, which is going to be called Punisher War Journal. Thomas Jane wasn't happy with the script and eventually said, look, if you guys aren't going to treat this seriously, I got to walk away.
I respect him for that.
I do too,
I respect him a lot for that. That's a lot of money he's walking away from, and he can just take it and say, well, do what you want to do. It's a lot of money to walk away from, because this was a lucrative franchise that he could have started.
I don't want to make it the impression that I'm bad-mouthing Rebecca Romijn. It's just that she should not have been cast as this character. It's really odd because you look at all the way all the characters who ported in from the comic were so meticulously casted. And she's playing this one character who is mousy, withdrawn, very unassuming, almost invisible. And there's Rebecca Marie in these little thin summer dresses where you can see every curve of her body. And there's this romance plot line that is kind of sort of introduced where she's got this crush on Frank. Oh, I should also mention my favorite character in the whole movie, though. Harry Heck.
Which one?
The guy with the guitar who comes in.
Oh, yeah, in the restaurant.
I wanted to see more of Harry Heck. It felt bad that they got rid of him so quickly. I love that character.
He just dropped in out of nowhere.
Yeah, he comes in with the guitar, looks at Frank, says, I got a song I want to sing for you.
Yeah.
And strums his song, and then says, I'm going to sing it at your funeral. He's like, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
I love it, though.
Well, I didn't remember, because it's, okay. Where'd he come from? Listen, if you like
him, I just wanted to mention Harry Heck, because I love that character.
Okay.
So that was, 2004 was The Punisher.
Brother-in-law.
Actually, he was a musician from Memphis that John Hensley knew, and he...
See what I mean?
He always said, if I can find a role for you, I'm going to put you in a movie. And I guess this was the role.
Nepotism works, folks.
That year also showed Spider-Man 2 and Blade Trinity, which we've already talked about. And then we come up... Oh, this... I got to use my visual aid again.
Yes, he does. And he's got it right in his hand, folks.
Hear it, right, guys? As I gotta do that.
That's a big honking book.
Man Thing. Directed by, and here's a Oh How the Mighty Has Fallen moment, because you and I were talking about this last night. Brett Leonard. For those of you who don't quite remember, Brett Leonard directed a film that was very, very, very successful in the late 80s called The Lawnmower Man. And then directed two other films which weren't as successful, Virtuosity,
which was the first movie which teamed Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe.
Hideaway with Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum, right. An adaptation of a Dean R.
Coates novel. I can't believe this was planned as a theatrical... Marvel had done a mini-series to tie in, which would give you the transition between the classic Man Thing and this...
The movie version.
Bunch of sticks that stands in for him.
Uh-huh.
This movie gives new meaning to the word nonsensical.
I actually fell asleep on it. I think I saw it.
I'm not surprised.
It came on the Sci-Fi channel, and I said, well, I'm going to watch it. I saw like the first 15 minutes, and the next thing I remember, the end credits is wrong.
It's really, 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 really,
I've heard nobody give this movie a good recommendation.
It has, once again, much like Howard the Duck, it bears almost no resemblance to the source material.
Oh, I didn't miss it.
The Man-Thing itself is a CGI bunch of sticks that grows and shrinks in reaction to things. It's not even a human being. It's really dreadful. It was originally planned as a theatrical feature.
Mm-hmm.
Then they decided they were going to release it direct-to-video. Then they decided to put it on the Sci-Fi channel. I think they eventually released it on DVD. Brett Leonard has since gone on to redeem himself a little bit. He's done a movie.
What was the next step down after that?
He went back to his home in Australia and did a film, I think it's called Feed.
Okay.
Which is apparently very transgressive. It's about a serial killer who finds willing victims and force feeds them to death. It's supposedly like really, really hard to watch. It's part of that torture porn subgenre we've talked about in the past.
Okay.
So he's kind of climbed out of this, but Man-Thing has got to be the nadir of his career and the career of anybody who had read the script or who looked at the script from across the street or who even had heard of the script.
He might have did it for the money to get back to Australia.
I guess so. Because, well, it was shot in Australia.
Oh, really?
Okay. It was shot in Australia, and it looks it because it doesn't look like any swamp that I know of.
Okay.
It's, oh, man. Once again, I would have to evoke the lowest level that I have for movies and call it a pulse-level event.
Okay.
And once again, much like the Captain America movie, this one did not have Kristen Bell.
Okay.
So that makes it even worse.
That's two now, folks.
Right?
I'm keeping count of how many times he's going to sneak in Kristen Bell references in this
episode. Also that year, The Fantastic Four came out.
Okay.
But also another Marvel movie, which was the big spinoff from Daredevil.
Oh, God.
That they had started almost immediately after finishing Daredevil.
Do we have to?
Because they love Jennifer Garner so much with the tight red outfit. She could carry her own movie. We'll call it Elektra, and we'll get that guy from the X-Files to direct it. And it'll be one... Fuck no.
Have you actually seen this?
I saw it in the theaters.
You did?
Yes, I did. This was, once again, this had the Mark Steven Johnson.
No, wait a minute. You didn't like her in Daredevil. Why would you go see her in the theaters?
Okay, temporary insanity?
boredom?
There was nothing else to watch in the theaters where you went to.
I guess not. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what it was. Whether I was seeing the trailers and saying, well, maybe this won't be so bad. But, oh, man, no, no. In fact, I remember at one point...
Did you learn your lesson?
Yes.
Well, then, it was well worth the time.
I think I can name the positives on the thumbs of both hands. Terrence Stamp.
Okay, always a positive. Playing Stick.
And Terrence Stamp.
Oh, okay.
It's a dreary film. It's shot in and around Seattle. It looks overcast 24/7. It's an awful-looking movie, and any question about whether Jennifer Garner could carry an action franchise is killed here because she is so uncharismatic in this film.
Again, this is one I fell asleep on. I think it came on one night. I said, well, let me watch. Because I wasn't going to pay to watch it. So when it came on FX, I said, well, I'll watch it. And again, 15 minutes into the movie, I was asleep.
And it's weird because they do a lot of lip service to the background of the character. There's a villain called Stone.
Yeah.
Who was one of the chased in the Miller issues. There's another character.
They've got the hand in it.
Yeah, the hand is mentioned.
Yeah.
The major female villain is called Typhoid, even though she bears
no resemblance to Typhoid
Mary. Daredevil is reduced to a half a line of dialogue.
I heard that there were scenes with
Ben Affleck.
But for some reason that they couldn't.
You know why? Because Geely happened. Because between Daredevil and Elektra, Geely had happened. And the perception was that we don't want to attach it to a Ben Affleck vehicle, lest we get the Geely taint. Rob Bauman directed it, who was one of the main X-Files directors, and he's a good director. Mark Steven Johnson wrote the script, and it's as stinky as you would expect from Mark Steven Johnson. Man, I hate that guy.
Okay.
I want to find him and beat him to death before he gets to
but
do...
You know
he's going to do Preacher next! He's going to ruin Preacher!
From seeing his work, I get the impression that the guy actually is sincere about what he's doing, and he's not just cranking this out. He's just not getting it.
I'm like, just terrified of what he's going to do to Preacher.
But he keeps getting work.
Yeah,
he keeps getting work. Because
you know why? Because his films are making money.
They make money. That's all I'm about to say.
Daredevil pretty much opened up February as a time for genre filmmaking.
Exactly.
Because that film took everybody by surprise and made a crap load of money.
Ghost Rider slaughtered everything in sight and made $500 million.
Yeah.
And in Hollywood, that's the bottom line. As long as your movies keep making money, you're going to keep working.
There are some sequences in Elektra that are just so excruciating to watch because they're so slowly paced and the whole film is set at like -2.
When you have an action movie, you start with action. That's why I fell asleep.
And
you start out
big
with...
gouts of time of Jennifer Garner looking like the loneliest, lostest puppy in the world. Who gives a crap, you stupid man-jawed bitch?
Now, be nice, Thomas.
Oh, and
she's got
on top of that, they come up with the stupidest, most cliched plot they could find. There's a chosen one. You, who are stained, have to protect the chosen one to redeem yourself.
How many chosen ones have we seen in the movie?
Make a line.
Everybody and their mother is a chosen one.
You know what would have been interesting? If she ran into the character that Eddie Murphy played in Golden Child. And they fought each other. Then I would be interested.
Then he shows up, he says, hey, I'm the real chosen one.
Then it could have Jet Li from The One show up.
Another
and they could be
one.
Both their asses.
And they could all be chosen ones. I gotta write that down. That's a story idea.
With our Babysitter Twins movie.
All the chosen ones get together and have a fight.
Now, before we get into the upcoming stuff, there is a group of things that came out. Lionsgate Entertainment, which signed this massive distribution deal with Marvel Films to put out animated direct-to-video films.
Now, this is their own in-house animation studio,
right?
Marvel, they own it, lock,
exactly.
stock, and barrel.
So far to date, there have been 4 films released. Ultimate Avengers, Ultimate Avengers 2, Invincible Iron Man, and Doctor Strange. I've seen the first 3.
Okay.
Ultimate Avengers, I thought was pretty decent.
I thought Ultimate Avengers was pretty good, too. Yeah.
Given
I'm not much of a fan of the Ultimates.
Yeah.
This was good.
Given that they took a hard R comic tried to make it into a PG-13 animated feature, that worked pretty well.
Animated Avengers TV show from a few years ago should have been this good.
Yeah, oh no, that animated, that was, I'm going to have to take my eyes out now. Thank you very much. Because now it's going to be playing in the back with the stupid armor that they used to put on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you had to buy the toys. I think that was the first original series that Marvel did after the signing with Deke.
And that's why they discontinued the Silver Surfer cartoon.
Which was a much better cartoon.
I never saw it because it just seemed like a lot of CGI that didn't need to be
done. Yeah, but it was, you could tell that they worked very hard at making it look Kirby-esque, and it did. They had Kirby dodge,
right.
The Silver Surfer was riding in poses. But it was very slow moving because they went too far, and they had long scenes where it was the Silver Surfer talking to himself, flying through space.
Ultimate Avengers was a pretty decent adaptation of the first 12 issues of the Ultimates.
It's pretty good, and I think it's well worth purchasing if you're a fan of the Avengers.
Ultimate Avengers is an original story set in the same universe, not so good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it introduces the ultimate Black Panther. It's just not as good.
I don't know. It just seemed like there was, for something that's supposed to have all of these things going on, it didn't seem like there was a lot of action. Nothing was happening.
Invincible Iron Man sucked.
I haven't seen this, but I haven't heard anything. And I know that you're the Iron Man guy, so I know if you tell me it's no good.
It's dreadful.
But the Mandarin is like a dragon in this
one? The Mandarin is an evil spirit, and there's a dragon, and they took 4 Iron Man villains and turned them into evil spirits as well. Blizzard, Whirlwind, Firebrand, and Earthmover are these spirits in Japanese armor. And one of the biggest problems with this film is that it's conventional cell animation, except for the technology, which is CGI.
Okay.
Now, this happens a lot in the Bruce Timm universe, and it's obvious, but it's nowhere near as obvious as here, because the second Iron Man shows up, and the second these goofy armored spirits show up, they look so bad.
But my question is, you have a technical-based hero. Why is he fighting mystical villains?
Thank you. There's a big twist about who the Mandarin is that you can see a mile and a half away with bad eyesight.
What was wrong with Titanium Man?
I don't know. Or the Crimson Dynamo, or any of these. If you look at the new Iron Man film, the Mandarin's in there, but so is Obadiah Stane.
If you've seen the trailers, which I know you, it looks like this one they're going to get right.
Oh my God, well yes. You remember me calling you up after I saw it. I'm not ashamed to admit it, I shrieked like a little girl when I saw that trailer and Robert Downey Jr. breaks through the walls in the clunky gray Iron Man armor, and you hear Black Sabbath, "I am, man!"
Now, see, that one, they're going to nail it. I got good feelings about that one.
I mean, it's a director who's good, who's a comic book fan, and unlike Mark Steven Johnson, is actually good. You've got a guy who cared about casting his film just right, with who is right for the character and not right for the box office. So you've got Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. You've got Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts.
Terrence
Howard has James Rhodes.
Yeah.
John Voight has Obadiah Stane.
My God,
this
is... How sweet is that?
I don't know who Rachel McAdams is playing, but considering the fact that it seems like they're taking a lot, and I mean a lot, from my favorite era of Iron Man, which is the David Michelinie,
Bob Lane era,
I've got all my fingers crossed that Rachel McAdams is going to be playing Bethany Cain. Man, this looks like it's going to be a ball and a half.
They had me at the scene where he outruns the fighting.
And the great thing about the cut, which is being done by Stan Winston, is that it's tweaked a bit, of course, so it looks real, but it is true.
But it's the suit
to the comics.
You look at the suit, you say, "Okay, that's Iron Man."
And Favreau is saying that we're going to see more than one suit. I'm hoping we get to see some of the specialty armors.
I want to see the stealth suit.
My favorite is the deep space suit. We also have coming out next year the Incredible Hulk, which we talked about in the Hulk episode, which you've already heard.
This one is the
Abomination.
Right.
This is the one with Ed Norton.
Ed Norton is going to be playing Bruce Banner.
And Liv Tyler is playing Betty Ross. Supposedly, Punisher War Journal is going to be out, which is the sequel to the second Punisher film.
Okay.
It's not going to feature Thomas Jane, as we mentioned earlier, which I think is a sin, because they want to go for a more cartoony, more quote-unquote true to the Punisher form. And that's your fault, you stupid son of a bitches. I blame you. When this thing comes out and it sucks, it's your fault.
It's your fault.
I blame you. We have 3 animated films, supposedly over the course of 2008, coming from Lionsgate. Next Avengers sounds really awful. It's about the sons and daughters of the Avengers.
Why don't they just do another 3rd Ultimate Avengers?
Or if they do an adaptation of the Young Avengers comic, which is really good. Also supposedly coming out from Lionsgate next year, Hulk Smash.
Okay.
And Thor. Then, of course, we got the two X-Men Origins films.
Wolverine
and Magneto.
Uh-huh. Magneto, I'm kind of interested to see, you because they're going to be using that technology.
That technology,
they
yes.
use in the third one. Mm-hmm. So, Sir Ian McKellen right. will actually be able to play himself as a younger man.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in seeing how that's going to work, because I think he's going to look kind of like android-like.
Yeah. He might look like Ray Winston does in the Beowulf film.
You ever seen the Polar Express?
Yes.
That technology is actually kind of creepy.
Yes, it is.
When you look at some of the faces, because they look like... You ever had nightmares about balls
yeah.
coming to life?
Oh, yeah.
That's what it reminds me.
And we're also going to have Spider-Man 4 coming out in 2010.
Now, this one is... They're going to reboot the franchise because...
What, Spider-Man 4?
Well, everybody's three-picture deal is up.
No, it's supposedly going to continue the storyline. Yeah, but it'll be different.
All the primary people
will probably
sign
be different.
Up for three
yeah.
movies.
This may be the start of the Jake Gyllenhaal Spider-Man. Now let me read out this list to close out of the films that have been set up by Marvel Studios and other studios that are in development but have not yet reached production. Ant-Man, which if I remember correctly is intended to be a comedy.
Yes.
That Marvel Studios has that. The Avengers, I think that at this point the idea is they want to do the Avengers first and use it to launch a number of other films.
Well, this one is going to be the all second yeah. string. It's going to be Hawkeye,
right.
Vision, because all the major...
Well, there's also a Hawkeye film in development, and that's also supposed to be more lighthearted than some of the other comic book films.
I'd like to see that.
Well, Hawkeye is another one of my favorite characters,
yeah.
so yeah. Paramount Pictures is developing the Black Panther, a project that has been in development for 20 years. Because at one point, Wesley Snipes was attached, and also wasn't there a time when Denzel Washington was attached? Now, the question is, which Black Panther are they going to go with? If they go with the Christopher Priest Black Panther, I always felt that Priest best captured the idea that the Black Panther was a king, which
right.
is what makes him unique in the Marvel universe.
Bingo, there you go. The Black Panther, I tell people this all the time, remember when Marvel was trying to create
yeah.
their own Batman, and
right.
it was Daredevil, and
yeah.
Moon Knight, and I would tell people, well, they've always had their own
right.
Batman for years. The Black Panther is
yeah.
Marvel's version of Batman, and they never exploited that.
Paramount also has in development Captain America.
Try this again.
They're not going to stop. Also, Deathloke.
Okay.
Which should be interesting. Of course, I think it's going to be determined upon which Deathloke they choose.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Cloak and Dagger being developed. Now you're scraping the bottom
yeah,
of the barrel.
Yeah, Cloak and Dagger. Who was...
Guys, we know that Cloak and Dagger has a big fan base.
They were third string characters
yeah.
to begin with?
They were characters who were supporting characters in the tertiary Spider-Man title.
After a few years, all of a sudden, magically, they would turn into mutants.
Doctor Strange is in development as well.
Okay, given the advances
the
that we've got in technology
yes.
now, they could really do the Ditko-esque wild
yes.
kind of stuff, so I'm interested in seeing that. If
Gargoyle. You want to talk about Cloak and Dagger being obscure. The ultra-obscure Defenders character,
mm-hmm.
Created by J.M.D. Matisse.
The old man that was in...
The Monster's Body. And that's being developed by Columbia Pictures. Iron Fist, another thing that has been out there for 10 years, is being developed by Lionsgate. Ray Park, for a while, was attached to play Iron Fist.
That was the last I heard about it.
Luke Cage. And I know that there's a director attached to this, not Reggie Hudlin,
mm-hmm.
but the guy who did Demon Knight. He's attached to this.
But you know how long this movie has been in development?
For another
Jim
5 years.
Jim Brown. I remember years back, they said, well, Jim Brown was interested in playing the character.
Right.
That's how long it's been around.
And I think that they've actually cast a Luke Cage, but I can't for the life of me remember.
John Singleton.
Okay, that's it. John Singleton. That's who is attached to it.
Right.
When you look at John Singleton's resume, isn't surprising considering
yeah.
that he seems every couple of years to want to do a version of a black superhero. Because that's
yeah.
what he did with Shaft. Nick Fury is being developed as well.
Okay.
Now, Silver Surfer has a very, very, very interesting director attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Silver Surfer is being spun off from the Fantastic Four by 20th Century Fox. And a couple of weeks ago announced that Alex Proyas,
yeah.
Mr. Dark City himself.
One of our favorite directors.
Is attached to direct it. That makes me interested.
Yeah, sight unseen. We're interested in this one.
Silver Surfer is going to be interesting. What about Submariner? Universal Studios wants to do this. Another film that's been in development hell.
That's been for like 20
yeah.
years now. They've been mm-hmm. trying to make a Submariner.
Well, that goes way back to the Universal pilots. Then we have, and Thor has a director too, the guy who directed Layer Cake, whose name escapes me.
This is a live action.
This movie. Is a live action one. This one, they're talking about frickin' Paul Levesque again, the guy who is the wrestler Triple H, who was so absolutely fucking wonderful in Blade Trinity. Fuck you!
You gotta learn.
Paul.
You gotta learn to take this. With
listen to me, Levescu. You married the boss's daughter. You're set for life. Stay in wrestling.
You gotta learn to
stay
take.
Stay in wrestling.
You gotta learn to take this with a grain of salt.
You long-haired, bent-nosed son of a bitch.
Long-nosed son of a bitch is making a whole shitload of money, though, ain't he?
Yeah, because he's married the boss's daughter.
It worked for Jermaine Jackson.
That's true. Yeah, I'm just saying is all.
Yo, I wish I could have married the boss's daughter.
And finally, apparently Columbia Pictures is looking to spin off Venom into his own series.
Well, they've been trying to do that forever also. You know, matter of fact, I heard it one time they was trying to make a Venom movie before they even made the Spider-Man movie.
Let me ask you this. Now that we've read this whole list of films that have been announced,
all right,
is there anybody on there that maybe you'd like to see that isn't on there?
Well, we were on Rachel Hawkeye, but you said that's
in production. Hawkeye's in development.
Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu.
Could be cool. I'd prefer to see that than that stupid remake of Enter the Dragon they're doing.
That would Jet Li would be. But I heard he's getting out of movie.
Dude, he wants to be to stretch himself as an actor.
He wants to be a serious actor now, yo.
I'm just thinking if there's anybody. I wouldn't mind seeing the Defenders. It'd be kind of a hard
sell.
But
that's kind of tricky to push over. If they did do it as a straight superhero movie. They wouldn't have any of the quirkiness that gave it a unique spin-up. Daughters of the Dragon.
Yeah, that would be kind of
like
cool.
I'd like to see that, I'd like
that could actually kick ass. Yeah. You could see somebody like your girl Vivica Fox.
Vivica Fox.
And once again...
Lucy Liu.
Don't talk to me about Lucy Liu, man.
Why not? What's wrong with Lucy Liu?
Lucy Liu sucks. In a bad way.
She's cool. But what's the other chick's name?
Colleen Wing.
Yeah, Colleen Wing. But who would you get to play her?
Although, sadly, she still wouldn't be able to act. This is another that I think would be a good fit for Jessica Alba because she's got that whole mixed race. You know, she's got that look where she's like mixed race. You're not sure what she is.
Her and Vivica Fox. That would work for me. I paid money to see that.
Yeah. I would not object to...
Remake Howard the Duck.
Without a doubt.
Now that I have the technology.
Especially if you get somebody like Gerber and or Ty Templeton, who's doing the present Howard the Duck miniseries, to write the script. And be honest to God, true to it.
Exactly.
You know, actually, you know who I think would be a good fit for this project?
Who?
A person that we've talked about and called a great, great man. Tim Burton.
Bingo. There you go. Tim Burton could do a Howard the Duck movie. You know what he would want to do it as he would want to do it with?
With Deep Roy?
No.
Deep Roy in a suit?
Stop motion thing.
I wouldn't mind seeing Moon Knight. Because even though people think Moon Knight, oh, he's a Batman ripoff, but he's a multiple personality disorder sufferer.
If they did that version of the Moon Knight, because that was the one I liked. They did that, and he's a self-created schizophrenic, which makes it even more twisted and interesting.
And if you get the right actor to play him, somebody who's a little bit on the edge to begin with, for some reason I want to say Skeet Ulrich. Somebody like that who you always get the impression is a little bit out there.
You look at him and you clutch your handbag a little bit tighter.
You know? And I also would not mind seeing, because I know that this has been kicked around a couple of times. I think I'm more of a fan of the character than you are. I wouldn't mind seeing Deadpool done as a goofy caper movie.
You lost me here because I've never seen
Or Deadpool. Another character.
I've never understood the appeal of Deadpool.
Okay, or another character, although I think this is a character I know you didn't understand the appeal until I showed you what the appeal was.
Okay.
Gambit.
If done the way that you did it
right.
When you wrote your fan fiction series, I'd pay to see that version again.
Right, but it looks like until a big bomb hits, these superhero movies aren't going away. There you go.
Well, that's another character. If we're going to throw obscure
characters like Cloak and Dagger,
do the Prowler.
Do the Prowler. What about somebody like Captain Marvel or Ms. Marvel?
I'd like to see either one of them, yeah.
Well, though I think that would be a case of somebody where they would probably show up in the Avengers and they could use that to spin off.
That's Marvel. She-Hulk. You would think She-Hulk would be a no-brainer. I know one time Brigitte Nielsen attached to...
In fact, Brigitte Nielsen had pictures done.
Yeah, I remember seeing them in full makeup.
With the green hair and the wig and the purple outfit, which she was wearing during that time as a member of the Avengers.
And I remember at one time, China Doll, they would talk about. Johnny. I am so glad that fell through. I went to church and thank God. Thank you.
Such a sad, sad woman, that Joni Lauer. Yeah.
Isn't it sad what's happened to her?
Yeah. There you go. That's it. Up to date.
Okay.
We did it. We're done! We're going to get cake afterwards. Cake and beer.
Oh, man. That's it. That's the end of it. That's Marvel at the movies.
And next we get to tackle...
Anything we left out was not intentional. But
I'm sure somebody's going to say, well, what about Nightman? Nightman sucked, guys, okay?
Matter of fact, that's our commentary on it right there. Nightman sucked. Okay.
Nightman was one of those TV series that every once in a while I would look through TV Guide and go,
that thing's still on?
It's still on.
Some shows that you look at and you say, they haven't canceled this thing yet? And yeah. That thing like ran forever on Saturday afternoons. Yep.
Nightman from the Ultraverse, which was, of course, the comic book company that was bought by Marvel just so Marvel could get their hands on the coloring.
The coloring
actually,
process.
That's a character I keep on hearing in the movies, is Prime.
Okay.
Which actually is a pretty good character.
Right. I know I've heard you talk about you express.
And I've used him, as you know, the Avengers West Coast fanfic that I've been writing lately.
But that's it, pretty much. We've done it. We've covered Marvel at the movies.
And I think the thing we can say, looking at this overall, is that there is a definite bell curve to the Marvel output. The early stuff, the stuff from the 80s, was really dreadful. And then they had that brief renaissance in the early part of the 2000s. With Spider-Man and X-Men and The Punisher, where they were putting out stuff that put the DC side of things to shame.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once Hulk came out, they got scared.
Because remember that period where it was universally agreed that Marvel movies sucked? Because
yeah.
DC, everything that they made was gold. It made money. It was like every time you heard there was a new Marvel movie, you groaned.
Right.
Because they're going to fuck it up.
The Hulk, I think, just scared Marvel silly. That was supposed to be a tentpole film, and it did not do as well as they expected.
Mm-hmm.
Every film since the Hulk debacle, Spider-Man 3...
And despite what people want to believe, no, the Hulk was not a bomb. It just didn't make as much money as they thought it was going
to
make.
If you people have not seen this movie because you heard it's terrible, don't listen to them. Listen to us.
The Hulk is one of the best. I keep going on, but I'm sorry. Ang Lee, you know what he said first? I'm going to make a good movie first and then a good superhero movie second.
Right.
And that's exactly what he did. There's nothing wrong with the Hulk. I don't care what anybody says.
And I'm not as big a fan of this actress as you are, but it's a sin that we're not going to see Jennifer Connelly playing Betty Ross in the new one. It's a sin that we're not seeing Sam Elliott, who was...
who nailed Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah. I mean, great. Okay, William Hurt's going to be interesting, but he's not going to be able to
touch... I've got nothing against William Hurt at all. I love him, but he is not no Sam Elliott. And Sam Elliott nailed that role perfectly. Everybody did. Eric Bana, I have no problem with it.
Yeah,
everybody.
And we're now at this point on the bell curve where Marvel's stuff is beginning to suck again. And I don't know if we're going to see a rise up. I think Iron Man might hopefully bring the quality up again.
Well, Rise of the Silver Surfer was definitely a
step
up.
I agree, that was one
of the best movies that I've seen. Well, not just the best superhero, just one of the best movies I saw recently, period. It was really, really excellent.
I guess for those of you who are interested, the DC one will start in August to tie in with the release of The Dark Knight.
We're going to do that.
I guess we'll do Batman and we'll do Superman and then Wonder Woman has only been on television. Oddly enough, DC movies are going to be much shorter.
Because there's not as many DC movies out as there are Marvel movies now who have stepped up their output.
Constantine we'll have to talk about.
Do we got to?
See, I like Constantine.
I liked it too. I didn't like it as much as you did, but we'll get into that
next
year.
Now it's time for the administrative details.
Okay.
Guys, if you want to send us an email telling us what the hell are you talking about, the first Punisher is so much better than the... In which case, you're stupid!
Tom.
You are.
That's our fans you're yelling at.
We love you, but you're stupid!
That's our fans you're yelling at. You want them to come back, don't you?
You can love something that's stupid. You can go and send us an email at betterinthedark@gmail.com. That's better the letter N. thedark@gmail.com. You can always leave a comment on our Podomatic page, which is betterinthedark.podomatic.com. Or you can do what a number of people have done lately and join us on our Yahoo mailing list, which is films.yahoo.com/groups/betterinthedark. Either way, we do listen to you when you give us input.
Absolutely.
And there have been episodes like the Christmas episode, which have been directly influenced by input.
By email, yep. Such as yours, which you will be sending in.
Until next time, I'm Tom DJ.
And I'm Derek Ferguson.
And whatever you do, no matter which movie you go to, no matter if you're stupid or smart,
go see that movie.
Here's what I don't get. How can a scumbag like Quesada afford an attorney like Hirsch?
You can't. The kingpin's got to be footing the bill.
Come on, let's go get drunk.
Not tonight. Got work to do.
You've been listening to Better in the Dark, featuring Thomas E.J. and Derek Ferguson. Special thanks go out to Chris and Jenna, the Amazing Spider-Cast.
the group at Spider-Man Crawlspace, Brian and Rob at the Uncanny X-Cast, and the members of the Better in the Dark Yahoo group at movies.groups.yahoo.com/group/Better in the Dark. Better in the Dark sure wishes Steve Gerber was still alive to hear us dedicate this episode to him and his wonderfully bizarre sensibilities. Previous episodes for the show can be downloaded from betterinthedark.podomatic.com. Send all comments, praise, hate mail, and pipe bombs to betterinthedark@gmail.com. That's better, the letter N, thedark@gmail.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. Better in the Dark is a Conspiracy Productions presentation. All material copyright Thomas E.J. and Derek Ferguson. Until next time, remember that looking like the saddest, lostest puppy in the world won't mean jack to us.
Yeah, it's real.
What do you want?
Justice.